Welcome to Movements in California, a podcast about migration and mobility justice, produced by the California Center for Ethics and Policy, or CCEP, at Cal Poly Pomona, and generously supported by the Cal Poly Pomona Special Projects for Improving the Classroom Experience grant program. My name is Brady Collins, Associate Professor of Political Science at Cal Poly Pomona and Faculty Fellow with CCEP. This podcast will explore how migration and mobility are embedded in many of our public discourses, practices, and politics. While we often think of migration at the global scale, reflected in our immigration and refugee policies, everyday migration and mobility is also impacted by local and regional housing, transportation, and social policies that shape where we can settle, live, and work. While some are able to move freely across spaces with little consequences, others have limited options in the spaces they can traverse and access. This podcast will explore these issues as they relate to different policy areas, from immigration to criminal justice and urban planning. In this episode of the series, CCEP student fellow Andrew Zablekis examines trans political refugees who, in response to hostile rhetoric and/or anti-trans legislation, flee their states for refuge in another, oftentimes California. Andrew talks with faith leader Thomas Diaz at All Saints Pasadena about the migration experiences of these trans individuals and the far-reaching impacts of hate speech, bathroom bans, and healthcare bans. They also discuss the role of pride in providing trans people and their allies a source of strength in the face of oppression. We ask that if you like what you hear, if you care about these issues, please share our podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. Thanks for listening.
Dear trans youth of Idaho, we see you. Your doctors and care providers are heartbroken and infuriated by the signing of HB 71 into law. We are honored to care for you and help you be your whole selves. We are awed by your bravery to live authentically in a world that continually questions and denies your existence. We are grateful when we get to share joy with you and angry when others try to erase you. We have seen how gender-affirming care helps you become yourselves, shining even brighter than your families imagined possible. How with the right individualized healthcare, you can be happy, thriving teenagers who grow up to be thriving adults. We are sorry that your healthcare has become a weapon to score political points. We are sorry that pseudoscience and lies have been used to justify taking your healthcare away. Across the United States in the past 2 years, state legislatures have adopted progressively restrictive approaches when it comes to transgender healthcare and trans life in general. States like Florida and Georgia and recently Idaho are among the array of states that have passed a total of 34 anti-trans bills in April alone, making them some of the worst states for transgender individuals, according to journalist Aaron Reed. Beyond simple legislation, the rhetoric around trans individuals has reached a level that has come to a near boiling point. The libelous smear of groomer, a remnant of the past anti-gay inclusion fight, has once again been corralled away from its original meaning, the one that is thrown at trans individuals and trans rights activists. This smear has resulted in shootings, bombings, incredible threats to hospitals, pride parades, and churches alike. All this has come to bear in the cause and stories of trans refugees, individuals and families who, because of the horrendous environment they find themselves in, or because their health care is being targeted, or because they have their freedom of speech to cast aspersions revoked, make the difficult decision to pick up their lives in one area and move to one of the states that provides a semblance of sanctuary. On this episode, I talk about the new advent of trans people who, facing hostile rhetoric or the potential to have their health care revoked, make the difficult move across the country. I talk about the rhetoric that has effects on trans safety at home and abroad, and the bills that get passed as a result of that rhetoric. I end with a discussion on strength and resilience of the trans community in the face of this newfound attack. The idea that LGBT people have a unique problem when it comes to child sexual abuse is not new. It has its origins in 1978 in the campaign of Anita Bryant, who sold her campaign to reverse a ban on sexuality-based discrimination as being supposedly protective of children. Seemingly, it is either the case that the LGBT community refuses to handle its problems with child sexual abuse for one reason or another, or The simple act of being visibly LGBT constitutes abuse. It relies on a worldview where LGBT individuals are seemingly inauthentic at best in their desires for acceptance. Scholars at the Center for Strategic Communication at Montclair State note two recent instances in American political discourse that have brought the idea that America's children are at serious harm to bear, notably the QAnon conspiracy and the recent attempts to bring about, quote, parents' rights in education, beginning with the Glenn Youngkin campaign in Virginia, and made national with Florida's own bill labeled as Don't Say Gay. The central belief of QAnon conspiracies, that there is ubiquitous and normalized human trafficking of children, created militancy in adherents. According to the study from Benton et al., not soon after following the election of Joe Biden, the idea of parents' rights got its start, making national headlines with the response to Florida's, quote, parental rights in education bill, proponents of the bill lambasting the opponents as groomers. From the same article, connecting to QAnon and the work of activists like Anita Bryant, quote, groomer evolved into a label that equates advocacy for the rights of sexual and gender minorities to the sexual abuse of children. And the messaging has worked in just that way. A recent poll in Data for Progress found that of likely Republican voters, 59% agreed to legislation that would open child abuse investigations to parents of transgender children who seek gender-affirming care. The same poll showed that 54% of likely Republican voters would be much more likely to support a candidate who would ban discussions of LGBTQ issues in schools or place further restrictions on transgender individuals. 45% said that if a teacher or parent was supportive of discussions of sexual orientation or gender identity, they were likely a predator. It has reached the point where top aides for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis are actively celebrating when trans individuals are made to flee their own state. Given all these, it is not hard to see how the environment that is created in states with very restrictive approaches to trans healthcare and invariably across the United States is becoming increasingly hostile to trans people, leading them to seek alternatives. Such rhetoric can have wide reach and can be felt even as close as home. I sat down with faith leader Thomas Diaz at the Episcopal Church All Saints Pasadena, who were the recent target of a bomb threat on behalf of their advocacy for LGBTQ rights.
It is, you know, currently in a lot of spaces, the elephant in the room, what people know. A couple of weeks ago, our church got a couple of domestic terrorism threats. You know, this is not our first rodeo when it comes to any forms of domestic threats. We've gone through this rodeo before. What makes this one different compared to the things that threats we've gotten in the past was that this was directed towards our LGBTQ community and also towards a member of the staff.
Following a semi-viral campaign that started at the end of March on Twitter, All Saints Church found itself the target of credible bomb threats, along with threat to kill prominent members of All Saints for their stance defending the trans community.
But that is at least our practice, that we try to not just be the courageous justice, but we want to embody it. And so I think when you have that take place, word is going to get out. And because we're in this very divided moment in our country where folks are being informed how to be violent and harmful to the other, you know, these threats are going to come.
When talking with trans friends of mine, I asked which bills should be the main focus of my writing. They mentioned things like bathroom bills and book bans, but wanted to make it clear that with all of this legislation, there was one through line that was clear. The bills that were passed were made in an effort to remove trans people from the public spotlight.
We have seen over a dozen anti-trans bills in my state and an escalation of those bills across America this year, over 400 pieces of legislation introduced. These are bills that ban our art forms, they ban our literature, they ban our histories, and they ban our healthcare. And the compiling of these pieces of legislation work to remove LGBTQ people from public life and make it harder for us to exist as ourselves and in our communities.
That was trans legislator Zoe Zephyr, who made headlines as she was barred from speaking in Montana's Congress by Republican state legislators for standing up for trans rights. Before we get to the point where trans healthcare is at risk, we have to first talk about the bathroom bill. When a bathroom bill is passed, it is not as simple as a trans person going to another bathroom, Given enough time along someone's transition, going to another bathroom can be a serious safety risk, leading people like the plaintiff in the lawsuit against Tennessee's very own bathroom bill to take steps necessary to avoid the bathroom. In order to avoid being forced into the wrong bathroom, this student was made to forego food and water intake while at school, starving themselves to avoid the harassment or embarrassment of having to go into a bathroom that didn't agree with their own perception. House Bill 1521, passed in the Florida State Legislature, is among the most recent of bathroom bills passed, signed into law May 17, 2023. Contained within it are some of the most restrictive penalties, up to and including criminal arrest for a trans person using the bathroom of their choice. Not only is it unsafe for trans people to go to the bathroom they are forced, if they do not, they may face criminal charges. There's a very clear attempt at making trans people functionally invisible before ever legislating on trans healthcare itself. HB 71 in Idaho, which began the episode, is one such bill that defines gender-affirming care for children, both medicinal and surgical, as genital mutilation. The law signed by Governor Brad Little on April 4, 2023, would make such care a felony, punishable up to 10 years in prison. The findings of the bill based their pullback of trans healthcare around a seeming lack of knowledge about long-term effects of medical transition, but yet had surprisingly little to mention of the staggeringly low desistance rates of trans people who opt for medical intervention.
It took me 15 months of constant medical visits to be able to get onto hormones for the first time. Taking trans kids off of hormones, especially if we've been on them for a long time, just like that, super dangerous just on its own, without the mental health issues that will come along with that.
17-year-old Eve Devitt says transgender children and teens go through months and months of tests and evaluations before even getting on hormonal medication.
With the level of gatekeeping before medical intervention in trans care, is it any wonder why the percentage of transgender persons who will never go through detransition is 98 to 99%? Put in concert with the fight for abortion access, the fight for gender-affirming care highlights the similarities that connect the two. Central to the fight is what is healthcare.
You know, and I think we're seeing that, you know, we can even address that, you know, with abortion access. You know, at the end of it, it's healthcare. So I think what we're seeing is the debate and the arguments are happening throughout our country right now. It's really less, I feel it's less about the adjective we want to add before healthcare, right? I think that the bigger argument is, how are we defining healthcare? And that is, it should be for every single human person.
Dr. Angela Cade Gepford, pediatrician serving in Minneapolis, echoed the same.
I'm here to let you know that gender-affirming care is healthcare. It is specialized healthcare provided by teams with training and expertise and evidence-based care, just like any other pediatric specialty that we provide for kids at Children's Minnesota.
It is concerning, and the escalation is concerning. We saw this begin with targeting sports bans of trans people. And very quickly, they used similar rhetoric to go after healthcare bans and book bans and obscenity. And we're seeing in Missouri a full adult care ban. We're seeing in Florida bans that actually allow for people to remove children, trans children from their parents, or children from their parents if their parent happens to be trans. It's very concerning, and our community needs help.
While certainly not new, these recent trends have created an environment where trans people feel as if they're on the cusp of a dystopian nightmare. Families describe having to stockpile medication that could soon get banned, all the while having to watch as progressively more and more bills get passed, making their lives slightly more difficult. The stress is evident. In an interview with NBC News, transgender woman Chelsea Fields noted, quote, "My energy banks for hiding everything kind of ran out."
I mean, how could it not have a mental health, you know, implication in their lives? You know, if you add both, you know, on the tangible end of things, bills are actually being passed and being affected throughout state policy, along with the ongoing rhetoric in mainstream media, I think that all gets encompassed to just, you know, there's only so much that your mental clarity can really take on.
The uncertainty of what the next day holds for trans care, never knowing what is believed about you by your neighbors, and generally feeling unsafe creates a situation where the trans people who can, along with their families if they could, pick up their lives in one area and make the trip to a state that is capable of providing some refuge.
It's gross and inhumane in so many levels. And that's why, you know, we're going to see an influx of folks having to leave certain areas of the country in order to find actual, you know, accessible healthcare.
This need is desperate in my community. This is not a hypothetical scenario.
Speaking to the need for her trans refugee bill, Minnesota House Representative Lee Finke spoke to the new reality that transgender people have to face.
There are doctors in Minnesota right now providing this world-class gender-affirming care. And there are parents who are terrified about what unknown consequences may come from simply affirming their child's authentic self. Utah banned gender-affirming care last Saturday. They were not the first state to do so, and they will not be the last. Tennessee is close behind them. South Dakota is moving. The organized political movement that has targeted my community is at work in every state that touches ours.
In response to new waves of anti-trans legislation across the country, states like Minnesota, California, and Washington are doing what they can to provide refuge for trans individuals and families. Fred Rogers of the popular children's program Mr. Rogers has a famous line of advice for when we find ourselves in times of distress. At times when it can seem like the world is getting ever smaller around us, it is important to remind ourselves that even in the darkest areas, there can still be strength.
I always like to quote from Fred Rogers that in times of distress, we should look for the helpers. Who are the helpers today?
The helpers today, yeah. I think I have a twofold response to that. I would say the first, it's our trans community. I mean, in the midst of threat, they're still showing up. It's not holding them back. You tell them, hey, we're having a certain rally. Sure, we're there. I mean, talk about the spirit of, I don't know if it's even resiliency that they're practicing, but I mean, by all means, come on. I mean, hearing your life being threatened in so many angles, and yet you're still not willing to cave in and still have hope. Those are the helpers. Like, you know, that's who we're leaning on and asking, you know, you're leading us now in this new, in this new paradigm of the Pride movement. I would say those are the helpers. And I would say the second to that will be, you know, yeah. There are really good straight allies out there. You know, I want folks to know that not every straight person needs to be, not every straight person has to be deemed as, you know, not worthy of being a good ally. They are. And I think those are the folks, I'm thinking about parents of trans youth. I'm thinking about parents of just of any queer child and in any age range who are stepping up to the plate. Like, no, you know, literally over my dead body, are you going to harm my child? And we're seeing that. And I think in ways in which I don't think we've ever seen it before. And, you know, California is not a perfect state by all means, but that's one thing that we can kind of count on in this particular state, especially for the trans community, especially in the LA Basin area, that they have access to healthcare. And, you know, but there's also another level to that. It's also to, okay, who's your employer? Who's providing this healthcare? Is it out of cost bucket? Is it with the network? You know, all of these complications that come with healthcare in general, but it's not like it's an easier process for our trans siblings. But I hope that, you know, the state of California can also be hopefully a potential, you know, a refugee for folks who really need dire healthcare, are unable to come to us to receive it.
With the ability to move being so deeply personal and hard, and with the reality that for those who can make the move, there are several more who can't possibly for one reason or another, strength and resilience is what will be needed in these coming years. And for those of us who are perhaps less vocal and less active with regards to these issues, it is perhaps time to get our wheel in gear.
I still think there's a lack of really what's at risk right now. I think there needs to be an evaluation of what is at stake and what truly could be stripped away just with a snap of a particular vote leaning in one direction than the other. we have to signal that it is about a life and death situation now. And I think that that's kind of the direction we're kind of headed into, again, this kind of heated election cycle, that it's not just about rights and accessibility to healthcare. They're all encompassed. But if you're to chisel it down, it comes down to life or death.
What can citizens, those of faith and those not, do, who really want to help, do to provide assistance?
Well, you know, donations, financial donations really do make all the difference. I would say find your local LGBTQ center. That, you know, these are all nonprofits, and so they survive based on both donations and pledges. So if you can make a donation, do it. If you can pledge to a certain network, I mean, that makes all the difference for the work they're able to do, Planned Parenthood being one of them. I would like to think that visibility also plays contributes, right, to all of this. So, you know, it might sound at times that maybe, I don't know, is it just cheesy to put, like, you know, a progress flag out on your lawn? But honestly, no, I don't think it is. I think that is a signal to your community, to your neighborhood, where if that's what you mean, that you are an ally to this particular community, then that's your flag too. And as I mentioned earlier, or at least in that previous remark, continue to say, pay attention to what's happening. And believe me, we will need all hands on deck once we get into the, and once we are fully launched into this election cycle in this country.
At the end of the interview, we had a brief discussion on the spirit of pride.
I really wanted to like talk about what trans pride or like LGBTQ pride is like in the face of, or like if it involves like bravery or like, because you know, as people make the move, there are multiple people who couldn't possibly make the move, and for those people, they need all the kind of security and support that they can get. So
you're right. Yeah.
Because I don't have a good question around that, but do you have anything to say with regards to like just pride in these days?
I mean, at its core, what the point of pride is meant to do is to really say we've had enough. We're going to flip over tables as Jesus did in the temple, you know, as an example, and we're not going to take this anymore. And I think more than ever, this year's pride has to be a signal to the rest of the country and globally, right, that you can attempt to, you know, shut us down, and it's been happening for decades, and yet, right, for over what, close to now 60 years of pride, we've had pride every single year. So no, I don't believe that, you know, just because of one particular threat, high alerting as it was, that it doesn't fulfill the joy and the possibility that pride offers. And I think that that is what we're gearing ourselves for pride to be here at All Saints. It's a recommitment to the movement that started at Stonewall. And I think it also is a commitment of like, this is why we are in the fight for both courageous justice and radical inclusion, because no, we're all in this together and no one's gonna be left behind. We have four core values, and two of them I think has really been brought up for us, and that is radical inclusion and with courageous justice. You know, it's not like the church hasn't had its main symbol be a sign of courageous justice or something being courageous, right? So it's kind of in our DNA.
As we go into Pride Month, give a thought to your trans siblings. Let them know that they are loved and that they are not alone. Do what you can to be a source of courageous justice in your life.
You know, I would say that, as you mentioned, this, I think as folks are hearing this, is going to be June, so we're in Pride Month. Check us out. Go to our website. We're having a good, multiple, abundant events taking place throughout the month. And all of our Sunday preaching are coming from queer folks. It's all queer-led. It's going to be a very, you know, really joyous and a recommitment you know, to this movement that started, you know, over 50 years ago. It's at this little bar area in Manhattan called Stonewall. You can check out the All Saints Episcopal Church website at allsaints-pass.org. A couple of things to look for. Starting next week, we will have all our Pride events on there. So maybe by the time listeners are listening to this, it's already there. So just go to our homepage. And if you go scroll all the way down to on our homepage, you'll see the progress flag. Click on that and it will go into our LGBTQ ministry work. And you'll see we have resources. We also have a book list. For folks who are curious about different titles and theologians, we actually have a reference list in that part of the website. So just go to the homepage, allsaints-pass.org, scroll down to the rainbow progress flag, click on that, and you'll see resource pages, reference, book references, and all sorts of things that we have up there. So you take a look.
A special thanks to all the CCEP students who worked together over the past year to put together this podcast series, and for the ongoing advice of our CCEP faculty fellows, as well as for the Cal Poly Pomona Special Projects for Improving the Classroom Experience grant program. Thanks to you for listening.